installment of this in this format, and now with that, hand over to the microphone to Tom.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi Fine. We first want to start off the echo what Rabbi Fine was saying, to thank Rabbi Fine Kamenetsky for coming to learn with us, to share her insights with us. Rabbi Fine Kamenetsky is the principal of SKA, the Girls High School in the Five Towns. She's an unbelievable teacher, a guide, all these Eza, sorts of wisdom for all of us. And it's a big privilege for us to be able to learn from her. So we're going to jump right in. Question number one. Tshuva is extremely daunting. It's a good place to start. Tshuva is extremely daunting. Most of us feel that we have to improve ourselves in so many areas, and we don't even know where to start. Because we want to improve on everything. Is there a particular area of life that is more important to start working on, and how should we decide where to start?
Okay.
Hi. First of all, just a real privilege to be here.
Do I need to use this? Yeah? Are we good? Better if I use a mic?
Better. We got ready to use a mic.
Really a privilege to be here. It's actually quite amazing, honestly. This is my alma mater, and I have to be honest, when I came here back in the old ages, there was no Beit Midrash, honestly. We were an amazingly strong, wonderful group of women who had a lot of pride in being here in Stern College. But our learning was certainly our own learning, and our own Avodas Hashem was not nearly as well-developed or structured from the university. And that was no fault, I'll be honest with you. It was a while ago, and I think it was just starting to emerge that women deserve and require for their own development and to be the pillars of our community and families that they are and should be, that kind of support. So, Ashrechem, this is quite amazing. I'll say even daunting to speak in front of a crowd like this, of this many people in terms of the quantity and the quality of people who are here late on a Wednesday night to really want to come together. I love the word that Rabbi Fine used as a community to really support each other's Avodas Hashem, and Ashrechem, you are quite lucky. But to turn my thoughts to your question, if I could just repeat it for a second, just to remind myself of what it was. The question was, is there a particular area that I think a person should start with? The notion of tshuva, of returning to Hashem, to our best version of ourselves, is quite broad and quite daunting. So I actually think the answer to that is that there is no answer. What I mean by that is that I don't believe there's a prescription that applies to each and every one of us. Tshuva is something which is deeply personal. And I don't think anybody can tell you how to do tshuva or what area to do tshuva in. For tshuva to be effective, for tshuva to be real and authentic, it's predicated upon self-knowledge and self-reflection. Really knowing who you are, knowing what your wiring is, knowing what both your strengths and your challenges are in life. And therefore, I think that there's no way to answer that in a public forum or in a public way. I can tell you a tool and a mnemonic that I learned when I was much older than any of you, and I actually wish I had known earlier in life. I had the tremendous privilege to attend a series of seminars given by somebody by the name of Tal Ben Shachar. He's considered to be one of the foremost studiers of a field of, and most prolific in the field of positive psychology. And positive psychology he happens to be an Israeli Jew, and he himself understood that this study of positive psychology is really something which is deeply related to so many Torah principles. And I had the privilege of studying with him and from some of his workshops. And he shared a pretty common, you can Google it, many of you may have even been familiar with it, but way to approach personal growth. Because at the end of the day, positive psychology says that happiness, which is, positive psychology is a study of happiness, sounds kind of hokey, but it's actually scientific, that happiness is rooted in productivity and having a sense of mission and purpose. That when we have a sense of mission and purpose, and when we feel productive at moving towards that sense of mission and purpose, then we will actually be happier people. And we even know that anecdotally. When you go through a day and you have nothing to show for your day, except for screen time, you feel like a whole lot of hot air. You don't feel particularly happy or good about yourself. And in that study, Positive Psychology, the following mnemonic was developed. It's called having SMART goals. That when we have goals for ourselves, and when we're involved, I'll say now, in the process of tshuva, of making Tavshin Pei Gimel a better year and for ourselves and Tavshin Pei Bet, showing the best version of ourselves, we need to be smart about our goals, and we should develop SMART goals. S stands for think about something specific. So what realm it's in, that's for you to decide. But when you're thinking about where area you want to take those first steps, make sure it's something specific. Not be good, be kind, but who to be kind to, under what circumstances to be kind to. S is for specific, M is for measurable. Do something that you can say, I did it. I actually can look back on this day, on this 24-hour period, on this interaction, and this particular space and say, I've climbed the mountain, I accomplished. Attainable. Make sure it's not, I'm never speaking Lashon Hara, I won't say a word over the course of the whole day. I don't know about for you, it's certainly not attainable for me. And you should do something which is attainable. R is relevant, which I'll get back to in a minute. And T is time bound. Don't say I want to be good over the Tavshin Pei Gimel. You want to be better in those areas in a specific time. Those are SMART goals. And when you're smart, you think about tshuva through the prism of SMART goals. It happens to be that to me personally, I think the R is a really important thing that's often overlooked. The R stands for relevant. What does it mean, relevant? The way I understand relevant is that it's truly something that you are motivated to do. And I think that's an important point to think about in terms of the areas of tshuva that we pick. Because there's a lot out there about where we should be improving. You know, everybody wants to improve in Lashon Hara. Everybody recognizes that we should. Perhaps tefillah is a common area that people talk about in taking kabbalos and taking steps to be the better version of yourself. Maybe it's nivul peh, whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, you need to be honest with yourself if you're truly motivated to be better in that area. If it's really relevant to who you are and your goals. I remember at one point in my life, I was struggling with the fact that I never seemed able to stick to a diet. And I read a very fascinating article, which was, recognize that if you can't stick to it, you might not really care about losing those 10 or 20 pounds. The world may tell you that you are no longer of an average or a median size. You may go to stores and not be able to find clothing in that size. You may be getting a lot of messaging that you should lose that weight. But perhaps the reason why you're not sticking to the diet is deep down, you yourself don't find that a relevant issue. You don't really care. And may I say, that might be a big bracha. But to ask yourself in the area of spiritual growth, what's something that's really relevant to me that I really care about? Everybody else is on the Lashon Hara campaign. And again, it's not that you think Lashon Hara is good. That we recognize. But that may not be a place that you're truly motivated. Look for those SMART goals. The R stands for something that you're really motivated to do.
I know, that was way too long. Sorry, there are a lot of questions,
that's
right?
Perfect.
Okay,
I'm going to
try. Okay, those of you who know me, I don't always speak so short. I'm sorry.
We are all subjective when thinking about ourselves, and sometimes we don't always see our shortcomings. How can we really know what we need to do tshuva for, and what structures or people can we put into place to help better ensure that we know what we need to work on?
I think that question is an excellent question. And I think there's really two things that we need to do. One is we need to learn how to be honest with ourselves better and to be able to say that I'm not yet there and be comfortable with saying that. Related to positive psychology is certainly Carol Dweck's studies in mindset that I'm sure many people are familiar with, the difference between a growth mindset and a fixed mindset. Successful people have that growth mindset, and that growth mindset means that you are able to say, these are the three most important letters in a growth mindset, Y-E-T, not yet. And to be shalim with that. To not feel inferior, to not be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, I can say that my davening's not great. I can say that I could probably be more generous with my time, with other people. I'm a really good girl, and I do a lot of chesed, and I go to the right summer camps, and I've got the whole portfolio. But maybe in my interpersonal reactions, in my interpersonal relationships, maybe I need to be somebody who could be a little less tight, a little more free-flowing with what it is I have to share, with ideas, with opinions, with time. And I'm not yet there. When we are truly able to accept ourselves, there's a phenomenal book titled Enough As She Is, recognize that it's okay to be far from perfect. In fact, that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us as human beings. We're not malachim. We're not meant to be perfect. And to be able to look ourselves in the mirror, this is an avoda in and of itself, but it's a really important one, so that you can do an honest imachesh to yourself. I don't believe that should be impossible. I think it's challenging, and therefore we would all benefit from point number two. But point number one is that should be a goal. It should be a goal that you can sit with yourself, and it's not depressing or upsetting. If anything, it's inspiring. Here is where I've come to, and here is where I have to go. Dame ayin basa, gula'ana tahalech. That's point number one. Point number two is that that process is certainly bolstered by relationships and friendships that allow for that mirroring back and forth to each other, where there's a security and a confidence and a safety in the relationship that, of course, we know we're not perfect. Maybe that's helped by the fact that we live together and you see some of my more private habits. Maybe it comes from the fact that we've experienced enough together to feel that confidence in the relationship that we can truly be vulnerable with each other. That vulnerability, classic Brené Brown, is an integral piece of any deep, meaningful relationship. And I hope that at this point in your lives, you either have or have the capacity to develop with somebody else that relationship. I will tell you that it's a daunting space when you have that person in your life who says to you, give it to me straight. But it could be very, very powerful. And I just want to give Hakaras HaTov and certainly wishes for all of you. Some of you may know my husband. He's a pretty intense guy. And he's really a super straight shooter. And I will never forget our Shana Rishona. We got married in June, and it was right at this time of year, and we just finished eating dinner, and he says, so tell me everything that's wrong with me. I was like, what? But he said, no, I want to hear. You know me best. You know me better than anybody else at this point in my life. And I remember being a little awkward and uncomfortable in that conversation, but I've come to value it, honestly, as one of the most special aspects of our relationship, and it represents that we're here for each other. We know each other so well. I'm not going to say anything you don't know, but we're going to be able, and I'm able to say it because we have that comfort and that confidence in the relationship. So it's awkward. Nobody likes to hear criticism. But when you know it's coming from somebody who values and appreciates all that's great about you and only cares for you to be better, then it's something which is an incredible gift in your life.
The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva points out that we're required to continue to do tshuva for sins that we did years ago in the past. We already have so many things to work on currently, things that we need to do tshuva for right now. How do we allocate our resources? How much attention should we be giving to tshuva for our previous avirus, and how much should we be focusing on the current ones?
So So I certainly am familiar with that concept in the Rambam and other places as well. I'll be honest with you, I have a really hard time. This is, to me, one of the most daunting things about this time of year, that we're supposed to be doing Tshuva on the whole year, in theory. I can really remember what happened yesterday, let alone what I might have done last April, you know, or March, or whatever it might be. So I actually think realistically for people, it's pretty hard to even conjure up those things unless they were some kind of major incident in your life. You just couldn't control yourself, you've never cheated in your life, and you cheated, and you still feel that busha somehow is still with you. Again, maybe there are people in the room that are different. I cannot account for the Lashon Hara, literally, that I spoke earlier this morning. That's not a good thing. It just goes to show how unaware and unattuned I can be about my actions and the power of my actions. But I think that it's important to realize, and the question is an excellent question, but I don't know how lemaisa it is. Like, how many sins from the past are we really carrying with us? And may I say, if you're still carrying them, then take care of that. Part of taking care of that is showing your harata, your kabbalah al-asid, your vizui, of course I should start with, your harata, your kabbalah al-asid, and maybe let go a little bit. Engage in that tshuva process so that you're not carrying them so deeply. So that's my initial reaction, is I hear the question, I don't know how practical it is, and if you're really carrying something with you with such guilt and busha, then it is important to discharge it, because it's important to move forward and to use that guilt and busha as a catalyst to do the tshuva and to be the best that you can be. My other reaction to the question is a little bit less specific, but I think it's an interesting thing to think about. We all have tendencies. We all have certain weak spots. And there are certain patterns of behavior that we exhibit, both in the positive areas in our lives and in the areas where we're more challenged, where we're less proud of our actions. And I think it's interesting, I think this has certainly been something which is true in many areas of my life where I have thought about how to move forward from inappropriate behaviors, that instead of focusing on the behaviors, to really try to get to the root of the sin and the action. So that I think that for many of us, there are patterns to our behaviors. So if somebody, for instance, recognizes that they have trouble at times keeping to the full truth and the absolute truth, they have a tendency to exaggerate. They have a tendency, perhaps, to tell white lies. I think this is much more common. This is not up there on the Lashon Hara Davening, Keep It Up Aim, top three list of things. But if we're honest with ourselves, I think it's something which affects many, many people. So to me, there may be past sins, and there may be current sins. At the end of the day, I can probably draw a little bit of a connect the dot line from the past to the present. And if that's the case, that brings a little bit of a self-awareness that I have. Wow, that I was talking about before. This is my own mirror to myself. I get myself into these situations over and over again where I seem to grapple with sharing the truth as it was and not exaggerating or telling white lies or whatever it might be. So to me then, you're actually dealing with both the past and the present, bevat achat, when you draw that line and you start to see those patterns. And the next piece of the avoda is to go beyond what I often refer to as the actions or the symptoms and get to the root of the issue. Is it that I feel like I always need to have something to add to the conversation? That there's a piece of me that somehow feels inferior if everyone's talking about something and I don't have what to contribute? So I kind of fudge the truth a little bit, tell the story that didn't exactly happen that way. Is there a need that I have to be the funny one? And therefore, I've been to way too many ufros, and you're like, there ain't no way any of that really happened. And somehow you think you're being put up there, and your goal is to somehow, okay, this happens to be a soapbox that I should be on, not in front of this audience, but of a different gender. I don't know why anybody thinks the goal of an ufros is to be mabayish the chassan in front of his future father-in-law and parents, but for some reason that has become a common practice. So, you know, am I supposed to be the funny man in that zone, in that situation, and therefore I need to do that, and I have a need to fill that road? If you can draw a line, if you do remember something from the past, And you start to see it with what I was speaking about before, that kind of self-reflective lens, then I actually think it can be super productive to ask yourself, what's the root? Because I've often given this muscle, some of you have definitely heard it before. You know, at the end of the day, if you have a cough suppressant is only going to take you so far. Right? That NyQuil that literally coats your throat, and it's called a cough suppressant. You can feel why it's called a cough suppressant. But if you don't deal with the root of your cough, if you don't find out whether it's viral or bacterial, whether it's an allergy, then at the end of the day, after 6 hours, you're coughing right again. Sometimes I think that's what we do with tshuva. We react to the symptom or the action, right? And we're not asking ourselves, why am I find myself exaggerating, not always telling the truth? And therefore, we're going to be playing whack-a-mole for our whole lives. It'll be this year, it'll be next year, it'll be the year after, because we haven't gotten to the underlying issue. So that kind of, it's not just being aware of what you do, but asking yourself hard questions. Like, why do I keep ending up in that space? And what can I do to move myself from that kind of behavior?
There's a halacha that during the Aser Yisrael Tshuva, we only eat Pas Yisrael, bread baked by Jews. This is intended to capture the idea that we're presenting and striving to be our best selves, even if eating Pas Yisrael is not something that we will continue to do throughout the rest of the year. This represents that we try to be our best selves during El Yom Kippur, even if that best self might not last us through the rest of the year. How does one balance their aspiration of who they would like to be with who they actually are?
Great question.
A great question, and one which honestly plagued me for many, many years. And she just had the opportunity to share last week in Teaneck a response to this question that I saw from Rebbetzin Heller, Rebbetzin Tzipora Heller, and it was game-changing. I did not grow up with this minhag of that's worked out in the Mishnah Berurah to, you know, be mapped on things like Pas Yisrael, stayed there very specifically during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. And my husband did, so of course, it sounds like a nice thing to do. Kind of accepted all of this minhagim in general. And I was pretty eager beaver. This is something which I think is important in general to do, to somehow mark both Elul and the Aseret Yemei Tshuva with the different hanhagos to remind you that that's what it is. This is not an ordinary day today. It is a day in Chodesh Elul. We are now 4 days before Rosh Hashanah. We should be in a different mindset. And yeah, what you eat and how you dress and whatever other chumras that you might take upon yourself are a part of that. So I took up this minhag on like the holy bee. I was like actually super excited about it, part of building our new house, etc. And it was exactly 1 year, and I went shopping, and I looked at this, there's two of us, and I looked at this big loaf of Pas Yisrael bread, and I was like, this is a big waste. We're not going to eat all of this whole loaf. And we were very budget conscious, young kolo couple. And I said, I'm not doing that. I'm going to go to the bakery, and I'm going to ask for just a half a loaf of bread. So I'm standing in line at the bakery, and the person in front of me is asking for a slice loaf of bread. And I see that it's like 24 pieces. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't even need 12 pieces. I need enough for 3 sandwiches for the next 3 days. There was a Shabbos, whatever it was. I only need 6, and I'm asking myself, is it like weird in the bakery to ask for 6 slices of bread? And then I just found myself and I said, this whole conversation is nuts. Like, if I'm doing this now and I'm calculating when I'm stopping doing it, then what exactly is the point of doing this, right? At least I should bake God out and buy a whole loaf of bread and pretend that I'm going to throw it in the freezer and we're going to use it afterwards. But in general, we're not even encouraged to do that. In fact, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't even say anything like a language of Kol HaMarbe, or if you continue to do it, this is a good thing. It just kind of tells you to do this. So I was really disturbed by it, because it really felt fake, honestly. It felt pretty insincere and calculated in a strange way. And then I saw something from Rebbetzin Heller who said, it's only fake if you think that the reason why you're doing it is to impress God. That would be fake. But God knows exactly what's up. He knows that the halacha doesn't necessarily demand this of you, and it's not something that you must do. And therefore, frankly, God doesn't require of you any more during the Aser Simei Tshuva than he does in Cheshvan, in Adar. It doesn't really matter. So why do we do it? Rabbi Sinhalo suggested we do it to show ourselves what we're capable of. We do it to show ourselves what we are capable of. And I don't think that's just true of Paz Yisrael. I think it's true of anybody who's taking on special zehirus, which you should be during this time. Think about what goes into your mouth, what comes out of your mouth. That those are things that we do, and we show ourselves what we can do. And she didn't say this, but it's the way that I absorbed what she said. One of the biggest obstacles to our personal growth is I can't. And one of my favorite stories as a little kid was a little engine that could. I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. And if we take upon ourselves actions where we do live to a higher plane, and we're not even suggesting that we always can live to that plane, but we see that I think I can, I think I can, then we open up worlds to ourselves through a spiritual growth. So it's intentional. It's a known thing that you don't necessarily need the whole loaf of bread. But you're showing yourself that this is something that is reachable at some point in my life when I may choose to do this kind of hanhaga. That's a mind shift, and it's an important one that I think is what is intended with that.
Are there any aspects of tshuva or general improvement in Avodas Hashem that you think feel a plea or apply more in particular to women, that apply more to women, specifically of college age? And if so, why?
I'm actually really just responding with my gut reaction, so I apologize if they're not super coherent. It seems to be going in twos, so I have two responses immediately. One is actually Be'nazim Mahaviru, and one is Be'nazim Malachom. That wasn't intentional. I'll start with the Be'nazim Mahaviru, and I hope this doesn't sound harsh. I happen to think that people in general, particularly in the modern era, in our tzkufa, suffer from this a lot. I may sound biased in some way. I think women suffer from it more. I think all women of all ages suffer from it. And like I said, I think all people do, but all women even more. And I suspect people, the question was of college age, may suffer from it in some ways the most. Where we live in a world where there's an incredible amount of comparison of each person to the other. So aside from the fact that it's just totally not the way Hashem created the world, also something which I like to quote a lot, very famous comment, Volpe talks about a lot of places, a lot of the Bali Musar points out that the only creation that was created in the Sheshes Mebereshis that was created Yechidi is man, meaning fish, schools and schools of fish. Millions of fish were created about a half. Flowers, trees, stars. The only creation that was rolled out one by one was human being. And it's pretty inefficient. Right? We had to wait for Adam, then we had to wait for Chava, then we had to have children. Hashem could have just populated the whole world, just like he populated the seas or populated the ground. But each and every person is a unique, unique individual. And when we don't recognize that, it's actually against basic yisodot of the Torah, and it's frankly super duper emotionally unhealthy when there is so much comparison between people. Well, why do I think that it maybe peaks in college? Because I think honestly, in the Orthodox world, your experiences till college are somewhat monolithic. You think there were so many choices of where to go to seminary, and they were so different one from the other. Okay, give me a break, all right? That was not expressing your individuality, I won't name anything, but by going to S instead of M, This is not like the Cracker Jack issue of the century, right? At the time it felt that way, but that's, we live, for better or for worse, how many camps do we choose from to go to? Lots of big choices, the summer temperate zone, and choice. Okay, right. But you're starting to get to a place where your lives are starting to look a little different. They're moving at different rates, whatever that means to move. That's something to ask them to divine. Opportunities change and evolve for different people in different spaces in all different arenas, and therefore the comparison, I think, does heat up. That comparison, I think, is the root of a lot of very challenging things in Avodas Hashem. Could it be jealousy, could it be Lashon Hara, could be maybe even Lefeni Berlosi Tein Nefshal, could be Gnevas Das, a lot of things that this could lead to. When we have trouble with other people's, what we see as successes, or moving faster in some arenas than others. So I think that is a real thing to work on in one's Avodas Hashem. It's pretty atypical sounding, not the typical kind of response that you might have expected. But I do think in our interpersonal relationships, and at the end of the day, it's not really only Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, it's Bein Adam L'Makom too, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shasali Kol Tzarki, that Hashem Parna Munas, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given each and every one of us the path that we need to go on, and the way that we need to go on it, the rate that we need to go on it. And I think that is a really important thing to think about and to remind yourselves as, because this really is the beginning of a lot of individuality, and you should embrace that individuality. You should embrace the fact that we're all different, that we have different cultures, and that we'll contribute to the world in our own unique ways. The second thing that I would really deeply, deeply encourage you to do is to invest in your own relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu via tefillah. Tefillah is very challenging, I truly believe, for everybody. I know it is for me. It's my own personal Achilles heel. And, you know, a woman's obligation in tefillah can be understood in different ways, the Rambam. And practically, there'll be a lot of times in life where you will not have the ability, and I'll say this is actually true for men too, even however the halacha is developed, you won't have the same space to be able to develop. Your lives won't necessarily be your own. You may have to be at work at a very certain time, family obligations, whatever it might be. At the end of the day, that relationship with Hashem, which I think is primarily developed through tefillah, and tefillah can be a lot of things, it could be meditation, it could be whatever it might be. It's an incredible gift that will get you through the stormy seas of life. And whether or not in the future you have lots of time to daven or not, if you haven't flexed those tefillah muscles, they're really hard to retrieve. It's like physical muscles. When something atrophies, it's really, really difficult to come back to it. But the stronger root that you have, and it's challenging, I'm not suggesting it's any easier for you at your stage of life to daven than it is for me at my stage of life. But now's the time to strengthen those muscles, because when you have that, you're giving yourself an incredible gift moving forward for the future.
When we are younger, we learn about the idea of schar va'onesh, reward and punishment, with the imagery of a scale or a balance. If you do more mitzvos, the mitzvos side of the scale will be heavier, and you'll have a good year. And if the avera side is heavier, you'll have a bad year. We know that schar va'onesh is a real concept, and our actions do have impact. Even in Mara Bracho says that if someone is experiencing yisurin difficulties, they should reflect on their actions and see where they can improve. In that sense, that is the tone of the entire El of Rosh Hashanah experience. Number one, how do you philosophically square the idea of schar va'onesh, of reward and punishment, with that of tzadik v'ra'lo? That sometimes bad things happen to good people and that those things are out of their control. Two, how can we incorporate that squaring away, that the melding of the two ideas, into our own mindset while we're going about the Shiva process, and how do we educate towards that idea more generally? A lot of questions. One, two, three. Yeah.
Great question. Hard to remember all the parts of it. And I will say a little bit of a daunting question, but I think this is actually going to be my shortest response. You know, we all have areas that we think about a lot. I've shared a few already this evening that I think about a lot. And we have areas that we don't think about nearly as much. It happens to be that my own wiring is such that in yanam of what goes on in Shemayim, and mashi yeh ba'atid lavo, whether that means Yivos HaMashiach down here on earth, or what will be in Shemayim, it's just an area that I think about a lot, where that I personally, and that doesn't mean that whoever asked the question or any of you who think in those terms is wrong. This is not a judgment in any way, shape, or form. It's mamash my wiring. The area of gemul, of schar ve'onesh, is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This week's parasha will speak about Nistros Hashem Alkeinu, Va'adikos Lanu Levaneinu. To me, there's a lot that's nistar, and that you have to know to answer that question. And I personally can accept that, I'll be honest with you. I don't feel a particular intrigue. I don't understand Tzadik Aralo. Neither do a lot of people who are a lot smarter and a lot greater than I. I'm bothered by it. I'm human. But I'm not particularly equipped, honestly, to answer that question because it's just not something that, may I say, are relevant to me. I'm not motivated. I can accept the fact that we don't understand a lot of those things. We don't even understand matan saran shel mitzvot. We don't know what's a kala, what's a chamura. We have no idea. And therefore, my attitude to that question is, put your head down, try to be the best person you can be. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's in charge, and he's making his cheshbonos. He is the kala gadol hayom v'hanora. The fact that I don't understand is what makes him the kal ha'adol ha'ayom ha'anara. If I understood everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, then he'd be one of us. So the fact that I don't understand is actually a chizik for the fact that we're not in the same space or place. I can understand that he's bigger and greater, and I can leave it at that. So I actually personally haven't, my way of answering that question is to divorce the two things. There are lots of questions in the area of Schar v'Onesh. We don't really know how it works. We don't really know what it looks like, what's in the world to come, what's here today. I know my responsibility. That's Niglat to me. But Niglat to me is I have to try to be the best person that I can be, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reward for all of those efforts.
How do your responsibilities as an administrator and a mother impact your relationship to Tshuva? Do they help it and have a different depth or dimension? Do they take away from your own experience, but it's worth it in the end because you're impacting others?
Because I assume as an administrator means in the Yeshiva Girls High School, so I'm working with that assumption. I think I need to separate because they're actually two very different parts of my life. Being a mother and an administrator, I don't think they're the same. I also think if you were to ask this to different people, by virtue of what I said earlier, they would respond differently. So obviously this is everything I said tonight is my own, coming from my own life, but certainly here as well. So being a mother was a huge adjustment. Be very honest with you. Huge. And not an easy one. My oldest child is a son. He was born on Yud Tet Elul. I think Rosh Hashanah was still in a postpartum, you know, kind of days and haze. And honestly, had a wonderful family, my husband, my parents, came back to check on me and Shul quite a few times. My kid was different. I was ready 10 days later. Maybe a day that my dear family who did care about me, but felt a greater obligation to be in shul for more of the time, and I was in a stronger place, was a misery. I had a really hard time adjusting. After I just talked about the power of tefillah and what a great stage of life you're in to be able to dedicate time to tefillah. It was really hard to be home all day with a baby and not feel a lot of spirituality. And it was an avodah. And I think that it's important to acknowledge that as we transition to different spaces and places in life, our Bavos Hashem looks different, feels different, and that we have to find our space. Fast forward, my youngest child was actually born on Erev Yom Kippur, and she was 10 days late, and I knew for many months that it was quite likely that I would end up in the hospital over either Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur. It was not, that's what I was doing, and that was seen that way. And I was quite nervous. And by that point in my life, when my oldest child was born, it was my first year teaching, and I didn't think I was going to stay in the profession. At that point, Baruch Hashem had a large library, and it was like a joke. We took a huge duffel bag with us to the hospital, because I was convinced that I was going to need to be involved in Sifrei Kodesh throughout the day. You don't have shul. I don't know if any of you have ever had to, hopefully only for good reasons, not be in shul on Yom Kippur. I mean, how long does your silent Shemona Esrei take to say? I mean, if you daven at home on the Yechidos on Yom Kippur for an hour and 15 minutes, kol hakavod, but there's no chazaras hashach, so there's nothing going on, right? So, like, what are you reading avoda to yourself? That's a big tzedekas. It's not so simple. So I took all of these svarim with me, and I touched none of them. And I had the most amazing, beautiful Yom Kippur. It's actually quite annoying to have to eat on Yom Kippur. I will put that out there, because that's the type of thing we always say, I'm going to have a baby and I get to eat on Yom Kippur. I had to eat shiurim every 9 minutes, so like I was constantly moving and measuring. But gazing at my baby and recognizing the incredible, incredible gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, the incredible power of creation, our ability to impact and to do things in the world, it ended up being, without a single sefer, my most spiritual Yom Kippur. My point being that we evolve over time, and we look at things from different places, and that which can be a very challenging space can, as we begin to open ourselves up to the opportunities that these new roles play, can end up being something very powerful. But you need to be open, and you need to be honest with yourself about what you need. While that is true, I will also tell you that other than that Yom Kippur, there was, Baruch Hashem, I can say this, never a Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur that I was not in shul almost the entire day, even when my children were young. I was makbid. I knew that it meant a lot to me to be able to be in shul. And no matter where we were, what it was, we arranged babysitting for my children. In general, I'm a very hands-on mother, not somebody who, you know, has nannies watching her kids, etc. But that was something which was very important to me, and to be aware of your own wiring and what matters to you and what you connect to is really, really important. So I guess in short, being a mother, I think, is the most amazing role that we play. I often like to say it is the only role in life, mother and father, that are irreplaceable, that there's only one person who plays that role for you and nobody else can be. It's not true of spouse, sibling, teacher, anything else. And it's an incredibly powerful role that we know Chazal teach us, but if you tap into it, it's really Doma Lelokim in terms of creation, support, nurture. It's amazing. So being a mother, I think, can be very, very helpful. Being an administrator, so I will say, can I say teacher, not administrator, is also a gift for my own Elul and Shuva. How lucky I am to be working in an environment where Elul's in the air, where I always say any program or anything that I produce with my colleagues in school, totally selfish. Awesome program this past Sunday. I just went to all those places. And I got to take people along with me. So, you know, that is a huge enhancement, to be involved in Jewish communal work, to be part of it. Now, that doesn't detract an iota. If anything, it enhances.
Okay, so the hour is getting late. We have till 10:10. The hour is not yet getting late. So, I guess we'll ask as follows. As a major educator and player in the communal life, what are some things that you feel we can improve on as a community? How do you think we can educate ourselves, our families, and our communities in this regard?
I'm going to start with something I think it's actually a threat to all the things running through my head right now, with the word community. The question was phrased, basically, what is the tshuva that our community needs to do? Is that more or less what it can? We have to be a community. I actually commented on this as words that struck me from Rabbi Fine in his opening remarks. We are fast and furious losing a sense of community. Blame COVID and, you know, lack of shul centrality. but there is, you can point to politics and certain liberal ideas and behaviors that indicate that literally, straight out of Sefer Shoftim, Ish HaYashar Ve'Einav Ya'aseh, that everyone just kind of does their own thing and their, you know, whatever they think or feel, no matter what ramifications it has on the world or community, doesn't really matter. I don't really care what you point to, but we are sorely lacking a sense of community. And I think that practically what that means, because it's very easy to say that, and hey, you can't be a community by yourself, so what's really my achrayus? I think that there has to be a much stronger notion of commitment to building community. So that, and again, this night is gorgeous, and I've heard from many people how beautiful the last few weeks have been here at Stern College. But it means that if you want Stern College to be a place that's Torah-centric, that supports people who are Torah, even if you're not necessarily in the mood or don't know the speaker or not sure the topic interests you, you show up, because that's how you build community. It's not really about what you need or what you want in a given moment. You know, if you want the community to have a library, then you pay your taxes and you return your books, because otherwise there won't be a functional library. And I think that it's really important for people to ask themselves, what is their miser on their time, on their energies, on their resources, not just physically, but for the sake of the tzibur? What do I do? You know, the rabbi is giving a Shabbat Shuvah drasha. Show up. Because this is a sense of tzibur. This is a sense of community. And I think that a lot of it just comes from people not thinking, being oblivious. I don't think it's so intentional. I don't think there's a huge anti-establishment sense going on, certainly in the people in this room. But I do think there's an oblivious piece to recognizing that if you don't show up, if you don't put yourself forward, then we're going to lose a lot of really, really important things in our community. And ultimately, we ourselves will lose. But more importantly, that sense of community will be lost. And I guess related to that is the other thing that popped into my head is something that we need to work on, and that's acceptance and tolerance of different people and different types. I made reference before, we're meant to be individuals. But to say I can be part of a community, and I can accept people who perhaps don't look exactly like me, don't have the same ethnicity as I do, don't have the same pedigree that I do, don't even have the same interests and passions, but I can learn from somebody else, and we can sit next to each other, and I can invite them over, and we can have a greater sense of community. Because so much, I think, of what I think there's some apathy that is getting in the way of people feeling committed to community, but I also think there's some rigidity in thinking and some limitations and judgments that we make on people very easily and very quickly that don't allow us to really form that sense of community. Because a community is a fabric. It's made up of different textures, different types, different colors. That's what makes a rich and vibrant community.
There's a phenomenon of are you mochelmi, mass WhatsApp text. Is there any value to this performance of the mitzvah and tshuva? And more broadly, what does this phenomenon reflect on where we are as a community in terms of how we're thinking about tshuva properly or improperly?
Probably guess what I'm going to say, but I mean, it's a total cop-out, if I could say it that way, and I think it's an indication, it's not new. I mean, honestly, before WhatsApp and text, I was in high school, you know, everybody slammed their lockers on their way out of school the day before Yom Kippur, Mochmi, and sort of, it's the same thing. So it's not necessarily new, but it's certainly indicative of an age of convenience and avoidance of difficult things. We spoke a little bit earlier about the fact that self-reflection and acknowledging and dealing with your busha and moving forward from it and using it to build yourself and relationships is hard. It's not easy, but it is the proper and necessary avoda. I have a few other things that I often think about that are some level of avoidance of really facing difficult things. I often tell kalas before their weddings that it is a beautiful concept, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Merachem HaRachmanim, that if you daven for other people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Meskali and Tzvilos. There is a space and place, and certainly a lot in the Sifra Kabbalah about the Koach HaTzvila, L'chassin and Kala on their wedding day. But if a Kala is spending the majority of her Tzvila time on her wedding day davening for other people, I suspect there's a lot of avoidance going on. Because figuring out, similar to what I was just describing of, you know, being alone and not in a minyan on Yom Kippur, figuring out how to make that day meaningful, what it is that you really need to daven for, what it is, how it is that you're going to bring Hashem into your relationship, is really hard. It sounds so simple. Of course, there's so much to daven for. I often say that, you know, it's ironic. Everyone thinks there's so much to daven for on Yom Kippur or your day of your wedding, which is considered to be a Yom Kippur katan, for a chasen and kala, and everyone says, of course there is, and they come out with the big four, parnasa, health, children, and shalom bayis. And I often say very directly to a chasen and kala, let's be honest, if you're really worried about shalom bayis, don't get into the dress. Like, that's a mistake. I don't really think that most chasen and kalas that day feel vulnerable in the area of shalom bayis. And frankly, Ezra Hashem, you should all get married at an age where you're not really worried. If you're within a normal range and spectrum of health, love you all, but you have no idea what it means to be worried about parnasa and supporting a family. It's not really where your vulnerability is necessarily. And we, Baruch Hashem, live in a day and age where perhaps you'll need medical intervention, but you anticipate that most people are lucky enough to have beautiful families. That's not really a fear that you carry with you. So it's hard to figure out what you're really daven for, even if it seems obvious and it seems clear. And therefore, the cop-out, may I say, is to daven for other people. Just a lot easier to have a really big, long, rich list. It'll take up a lot of time. It's not conscious, what I'm suggesting at all. But at a subconscious level, it's a little bit of avoidance. Similarly, I think this Ari Mochmi, and whether it's verbally or in text, hard to look at somebody and say, our relationship's been rocky. And again, there's shilas to ask about this. If they don't even know what you did wrong, do you tell them? Is there a kusha involved in that? It's not simple. It's complicated. But if your relationship's rocky, she knows your relationship's rocky. And be the bigger, stronger person who says, our relationship's rocky. I'd like to make it better. Or at least know that I feel badly that our relationship's rocky. Ask them what it can be that you can do to make it better. That is a much more authentic form of asking Mechila.
Okay, so now it appears that the hour is getting late. So like we've been doing before we ask our last question, we just want to thank Rabbi Sikonetsky for joining us, for sharing really deeply profound insights that I think we're all going to take with us into the Yom HaNorah experience and Shiva process. So I guess, just to top off, we'll ask you. What is the most meaningful part of the Yom HaNorah experience for you? And could you share at least a couple highlights, most exciting thing?
A few.
I didn't always, but I happen to love Yom HaNorah. I love the space and place that is created for us, that if we take the advantage to access, is unlike any other time of year for spiritual connection. I'm not going to tell you that I always put hours and hours in Hachana before I get to shul, but at least those tefillos really do provide if you understand what's going on. I'll tell you a little thing that I like to do. I happen to be, I have grown into a public persona, but by nature I'm actually an introvert. I love the power of the tzibur, particularly on Yom HaNorah. I love being in shul. Have a schuss to daven in a very, very beautiful minyan. But at the end of the day, there's something powerful about the private space and place. So I try to take advantage of a few moments that to me are very, very powerful, and I just highly recommend doing this. For instance, I always like to, and it's possible you have access to it here in Stern, I always like to make sure, and I do this with my children as well, but the first time I hear shofar is not on Rosh Hashanah. I try to go to a minyan. You still have that opportunity to do it. Sometimes I don't even daven with the minyan. When my kids were little, we would go on a Sunday morning at Elul to the very, very end of the minyan, just to hear shofar. I was often the only woman in the women's section. I love that. And to kind of have that experience outside of the everybody's around me and the whole, you know, aura, so to say, I found that that was powerful. Similarly, from the time I was probably in college, maybe even in high school, I happened to really appreciate davening mincha with a minyan, which I do not do regularly, on Erev Yom Kippur. Most large communities have minyanim every half hour, so I can't even say my day revolves around it. I kind of hop into a minyan when I'm ready on Erev Yom Kippur. Again, Erev Yom Kippur has a vidui, and similar to what I just said about shofar, I love my first vidui being in a women's section that's basically empty, with very few people in a corner by myself, something that we have the privilege of doing that men don't actually have often. And I think that finding those private moments can be very, very, very powerful. Could be slichos, could be other times, but I think that's huge. And the second thing is to get shofar. It's an incredible moment, a moment that I think you should prepare for what you want your kavanos to be. That primordial cry, what you put into it, what it means to you. There's plenty that you can read and learn about it. Sacha Cohen has his 10 things. Mirsky has an amazing article in the Gaon Halacha that I always think back to about what it represents, maybe not for now, maybe for another time. But it doesn't really matter what it is. I don't think you have to, again, bring the sperm that I brought with me to the hospital when my daughter was born. I think you can use your own brain, your own mind, your own heart to ask yourself in advance, what does that cry mean to you? And how are you going to connect to it? Because it's incredibly powerful.
Okay, thank you so much, Rav Zakharinsky. That was unbelievable. I think now we're having the women's quintets. Is that correct? Okay, I think we're going to turn off some of the lights for more.
We're going to leave in 1 second, just basically the middle of the room, the middle of the circle.